Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And welcome to this episode of Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host, and today in our tower, we have all things Spanish. We have the expert of all things Spanish here with us, Pedro Rubalcava. And Pedro is here partly because of the RE Congress, the Religious Education Congress. He has so many titles and so many things. He is now the Director of Music Development and Outreach for Oregon Catholic Press, one of America's leading publishing companies. Pedro, welcome. Welcome to the Tower.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
It is so good to have you. Your music is certainly not a stranger here at Christ Cathedral. We sing it all the time with our wonderful Dr. Rick Soto. We're going to hear some of the pieces we actually sing here. We should have Rick's recordings, but we have OCP recordings today. But we are so happy you're here. We have so much to talk about because the Spanish church is such a big part of our American church, isn't it?
This is correct. The numbers speak for themselves. Just recently, I was reading some demographics that 60% of the Catholics 30 and under are Latinos.
60%. Yeah. Wow. The retention rate after, you know, I'm looking at our millions of confirmation kids out there. You know, this morning we had 50-some catechumenates who are coming into the church. But, you know, you wonder where they are a year from now. Well, I'll tell you, our pews are packed every single Sunday, 12 Masses a weekend. It's amazing. And it's because basically Christ Cathedral is an ethnic church. Vietnamese, Chinese, Spanish, and some English, a few of us English, Anglos. But Pedro, I want to talk about you first. You know, here you are. You, for 15 years, you were the editor, the Spanish director of the Spanish and bilingual editions of OCP, the Oregon Catholic Press. And now you're the director of music development for and outreach for the whole company, not just Anglo and Spanish, or not just Spanish, the whole enchilada, the whole thing. And so I want to hear what brought you there. You've been a parish musician. You've been a parish DRE, religious education. The last time you and I were together, besides this visit, we were in Rome together at a conference. You are one of the great leaders of our church. And so what brought you there? Were you musical as a child? What was your faith life like? It's always fascinating to me and our listeners how you came to this. You know, when it was it you decided the church was your life and you were going to give your life to the church?
One of the most important points in my life is that I recall is being raised in a Catholic family, and we lived out in the country.
And where was that?
This was in Imbrale, California, in Imperial County, which is east of San Diego. Yeah,
southeastern desert. Nice. Yeah.
And it's an agricultural valley. And if it wasn't for the Colorado River coming in there, I mean, they wouldn't
be just desert. Nothing. But, yes.
So my parents, very devout Catholics, and there came a time when the pastor of the church asked my father, my parents, if he could come out and do ministry out in our house. So our house became actually a mission of the parish.
Like a little chapel.
Yeah. You know. And so we had Sunday Eucharist once a week, even though it wasn't on Sunday. Got permission from the bishop to have either on Wednesday or Thursday, depending who the pastor was.
Okay.
Mass. And we had religious formation for everybody, not just the kids, but adults. And we had...
And not just your family, but your neighbors.
Yeah. So there would be anywhere from 50 to 200 people.
Oh, my gosh. Did your mom have to cook?
Well, you know, there was always something. And people
always
would
some
bring
food.
Things.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so in my earliest recollection of being involved, because prior to that, I was actually at my cousin's house, who also lived in the country. They moved to town, so it came to our house. And we became the host, the parish mission church, as it were, Our Lady of Perpetual Help from Brawley. And so we were the sacristans. We were the ones who took care of everything liturgical at the parish, our home parish. So we had an altar that I remember sometimes we had people coming over to stay, and I would always sleep under the altar. There was this big altar, and that was my sleeping place.
Wow.
And we'd push it aside, obviously, but then, and in those days they had the big, I forget what they call them, but it's the big stones that have the relics in them placed in the altars. As the pastor gave us the old altar from the church, and that was it.
Wow.
We had it in our house.
Home. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Now, for some kids, that would mean, I'm never going to church again. I've had enough church. But for you, it was that spark.
So we went three days a week, pretty much, even though we lived out in the country. So we would go on the Wednesday or the Thursday at our house, and we were always at Mass on Friday evenings, and then on Sundays.
And the Sundays you would go to the parish church?
Yes, yes. Wow. And so my father obviously was, he wasn't a seasonal worker like a lot of the people that were out there, and that's why it was convenient or made it possible, the pastor made it possible for them to have the Mass experience because they work 7 days a week.
Wow.
And so they, and from there, I mean, my cousins were the first musicians at the home parish, and then I grew up singing. 11, 10, 12 years old, and learning the repertoire, the songs of the Mass. And after they left, they moved to town, then I became the musician there at the house.
And did you play guitar, piano?
I played guitar, and then eventually taught myself how to play the keyboard. I had an uncle from Topeka, Kansas, who sent this old Gibson combo organ.
I would play things.
And there was a time in
mostly by ear?
By ear.
Okay.
Yeah, everything was by ear at the time.
And where'd the repertoire for the little home parish come? What kind of songs did you sing?
We sang at those times. I mean, I'm trying to remember. We probably used, it was a J.S. Pollock Misalito Parroquial or something like that.
Yes.
And so they had some songs connected to that. There was some nuns that were there from Mexico, and they would teach us a repertoire at the time, like Cesario Gavarain and some of the Spanish composers that were coming right shortly after the renewal of the liturgy. And they began writing these things, so this is what we would learn. I remember one of the very first songs that I learned was actually a Spanish version of Suzanne Tulin's I Am the Bread of Life.
Oh, wow.
And that was part of the repertoire there. And it's
kind of fun to think down memory lane and think through the songs.
Yeah.
Somehow, you know, every now and then I think about songs in my childhood that came from, you know, St. Gregory Hymnal, or, you know, a melody will pop in your head and you think, where do I know that from? And there it is. You know?
And some of these songs that we sang, I don't know where we learned them from. I learned from my cousins. And
lots of
oral tradition.
Yeah.
And we would sing and everybody would know this. Okay, what key? This is the key we played in.
Here we go.
You know? And so those are, I've been able to find them in different hymnals. You know, there was a unique hymnal I found from 1920s or 30s. And it was from El Paso, and it was a Spanish hymnal, and it had Latin, and it had Spanish in there.
Yeah.
And it was a book, you know, and it's these wonderful songs, some of which I know, and some of which I know, but the melody is just slightly different than what is written in there.
Now, part of what when we mentioned that conference in Rome, we were there celebrating the 50th anniversary of liturgy coming into our own languages. And would those songs have been used at Mass, or devotional songs, and Mass would have been in Latin with Latin chants? Or?
Well, I remember as a little kid, the Mass in Latin. And I don't remember actually singing the songs. We had a choir, and I remember looking back, and my mom would pinch me because I couldn't look back. But my father knew the songs. I remember him singing the Credo, and I'd hear him singing it every once in a while. And I'm trying to remember, he may have sang it later in life, too, and because all of a sudden I was talking about something about maybe Gregorian chant, and he started singing the Credo. I said, oh my gosh, he says, oh yeah, and he brought out his old missal. I think one of my sisters has his old missal and it has the chants in there. He couldn't read music, but
it was
somehow
in their heads. Yeah. And you know, we didn't have that notated. People just sang. I remember taking my kids to like Pueri Cantoris conferences in Rome, and you know, there's the American kids looking spelled dumb. Not being able to sing anything, and here's a kid from China, and here's a kid from India, and here's a kid from Africa, all singing Credo 3 and mm-hmm. Gloria, and it was amazing that it was part of all those cultures, and now all of a sudden all those cultures could have music of their own culture at the liturgy,
right.
And what that meant for us all.
But I don't remember, since I was so young, I was born 1958, and I remember the Mass in Latin, and I don't remember if we were singing Latin and Spanish at certain times. It seemed like there was some of that happening, but certainly by the time we were, I remember distinctly going to the Friday evening masses at the parish, and we were singing some of these devotional songs that we had been singing for a long time. And they tended to be more like Eucharistic hymns that we would sing and some Marian hymns.
Yeah, sometimes describing the action.
Yeah.
Like, Lord, I'm not worthy, all about communion.
Yeah, things like that.
But most of the time, at least in the English world, we would sing Latin all through the Mass, but then maybe you could sing an English hymn at the end, you know, when Mass was over.
And maybe that's what it was, and I don't have a very clear recollection of it. But
I'm a little older, so I remember it longer, but around 64, 65, it was all gone. All of a sudden, it just disappeared, and we were doing all vernacular. Well, I think it's time for a little music, and then we'll come back and talk about leaving your home parish and literally your home parish and where you went from there. Okay. Tell us about a little song and introduce it, and let's hear some music.
Yes. This is a song called Deo Gracias. And Deo Gracias was probably one of the first songs that I created that was multilingual. I was at a parish in St. Mary's in Escondido, California, and the pastor, or Father Peter, was adamant that we have, for any of our intercultural celebrations, that we have Latin and that we have organ. And so it was, I remember the organist, very, very fine organist, Terry, I can't remember last name, but, and so I began to develop these songs that had Latin refrains and Latin antiphons, and then with Spanish and English verses. And so this is one of the first ones that we used for the very first celebration of intercultural liturgy that we had at the parish that was on Thanksgiving. And so Deo Gracias, obviously Thanksgiving.
Okay, there we go. Well, we are thankful you're here in the tower with us. We will be right back with a lot more from Pedro Rubalcava. Stay tuned. Don't go away.
Gracias, aleluya, Deo gracias, aleluya. Let all your works give you thanks, and let all your faithful ones bless you. Deo gracias, aleluya, Deo gracias, aleluya.
We'll be right back with more from your host, John Romeri, and his special guests on Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. We are having a fascinating topic today, all things Spanish. And we have the expert of all things Spanish right here, Pedro Rubalcava. And Pedro is here. You just heard one of his pieces that he wrote. It's actually in Latin. It was using the organ, using bilingual verses. We talked a little bit about your beginnings, and it was in a home parish, in a home chapel, literally home parish. And now let's talk about what, you know, if this was the beginning, where'd you go from there? What was the next step in your decision not to be a chemist or a scientist? Or how did you know church was for you?
Well, we were always involved in church. And so I began then at some point in time, maybe 14 years old, because of the pastor who was there, Father Joe Mawicki, loved the liturgy. And I remember him asking me to sing the Exultet for the Easter Vigil.
Okay.
And so, again, didn't read music, so I learned it by rote. He had these, I don't know if it's a cassette or a record or something like that. And he said, learn this. So I had to memorize it.
Sure.
And so I would sing the Exultet at the Easter Vigil.
And it started you right off at the top.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I was... shortly thereafter, I became the director of one of the choirs there at the principal mass. And there was a time when I remember, because Rose McLaughlin, who was the organist, had to go tend to her mother in Ireland. And I was one of the ones that got called to play for the weddings and the funerals. And I played the organ. I taught myself how to play some.
So still
pedals.
All self-taught.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And by that time, cause I was in high school, and maybe just out of high school, and I could actually read the notes and things like that.
Were you in the high school choirs?
I was in the high school choir, absolutely. I was, when I was in grade school, one of the teachers took me out of recess and said, come in. I thought I was in trouble. Everybody goes, oh, he's in trouble. But she said, we want you to sing a solo for the spring program. And so she had me sing, I didn't remember the song is Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? So that's what I sang. And they changed some of the words because one of the words was hell, and they changed it to hand or grand or kind of say that. And then something for graduation when I was in eighth grade. But then I became, they said, you better sing at the high school. And because this is my grade, elementary school was K through eight.
Mm-hmm.
And in high school, then I joined the boys chorus, and right away I went to concert choir, and then we tried out for this madrigals, which was more like a performing dance group, but we did actually sing some madrigals as well. And so for me, I always sat next to the people that could read the music, and I could, you know, kind of follow along, and so it was good training, and I taught myself elementary, rudimentary harmony and theory.
I could read at high school or anything. So
no,
it was really just self.
Yeah, we did learn some things, not very much, but and so at that time I began to play in a Latin dance band, and I was a keyboardist for Latin dance band when I was a sophomore in high school.
It all adds to the
podcast. So you develop your chops, as they say,
sure.
but always playing at mass, always playing. A cousin of mine started a mariachi and said, will you learn how to play guitarrón? Absolutely. So I actually played a mariachi when I was 16 years old to, you know, whatever, and after, I used to work with a lot of different choirs in the Imperial Valley where we were there, and I, you know, especially with youth ministry, and we formed this network of musicians. There was priests and pastors that taught us, you know, and always guided us. My instruction that I had with Father Joe Mawaki, and he gave me an old missal, and I would read the general instruction of the Rome Missal at the time. I read Sacrosanctum Concilium probably when I was 17 or 18. And
okay, they really pigeonholed you right into this. Well, there was no way out, was there?
Well, I mean, it wasn't, I didn't think it was a forced thing. It was just something that kind of came natural. And, you know, I even played in nightclubs and things like that, playing all kinds of different musics. And
what was the turning point? When did you say, I'm going to do this for my life? This is my living.
Well, I thought that I was, because then after high school, I said, I better learn something. So I went in college as a music major.
Uh-huh.
That was
How'd
my
that
thought.
Go?
Well, I actually went to sign up for the basics, whatever it was.
Harmony, you know, one.
Harmony, yeah. Whatever it was. And the professor there, Dr. Fiesler, he actually pulled me aside. He said, no. I didn't know who he was, but he said he knew who I was. He says, you don't belong in that class. You belong in theory, whatever it was, harmony and I forget what it was called, harmony and something. And it was basically, since it was so few students, it was two different classes, but it was 5 days a week. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then the Tuesday and Thursday, but he ran it all because it was the same students for the most part. And right out of the chute, you go into all these things, and I remember after the first couple of days, because we had assignments to write, and I said, I don't know. He said, I know, but you'll get it. And so he said, these are the, and he gave everybody the same instructions. You know, we're all going to follow the rules. These are the rules. You know, no parallel fizz, no parallel octaves, all these kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And so the first assignment was write a piano arrangement for something. I said, oh my gosh, what the heck is that? You know, or a chord, I forget what it was, but it was something. And you know, you had to write the chord number 1, 4, 3, whatever the chords. And he taught us all this. And so the first assignment, I remember I got it back and it was all just marked up with red, and he would play things, you know. And he said, I don't want you
supposed to write them down.
Yeah. Right? And he says, I don't want you to plunk it out. I want you just to think, see it, and play. And so we had all this training, and at the end of the class, I ended up with a B as a semester, and I said, well, I guess it wasn't so bad, and took another year. But after the end of the year, I said, I think maybe being a music major is probably not the best thing for me. And by that time, I had actually started playing with the band. I was working at the music store and managing the music store and playing the nightclubs, and it was actually rough. But shortly after starting to play the nightclubs, I said, you know, I think this is enough. I had been part of this. It was called a vocations awareness group that two of the young priests in the Imperial Valley, Father Tony, Father Bud, had started. And it was young women and young men who they said, let's just begin to talk about. And I ended up going to the seminary in San Diego. And the first year I was there, first semester I was there, I had this kind of fame among some of the priests there or something. Yeah. They knew we're going to make him, the staff made me the music director of the seminary. And what that involved was scheduling folks and mainly that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So while I was there, then right off the bat, I knew that wasn't my vocation, but it was a wonderful experience. You know, got to know the Liturgy of the Hours, got to look at liturgy from a different perspective, you know, serving of the masses.
Did you feel like there was that calling to the priesthood?
I was wanting to know. I think initially I thought, yeah, this is it. I mean, I gave my van to my little brother. I got rid of everything.
Wow.
I said, this is it. But then after being there, I said, well, maybe this isn't it.
I want my van back.
maybe not like that, but it was a good experience. It was a wonderful experience.
Well, and gave you another whole vision of the liturgy.
Absolutely. And I think it was just my love, for the liturgy began to deepen. And I had already been writing for the liturgy even before I came to the seminary. I mean, some of those things I wouldn't claim anymore, but it was just part of the process of coming to that.
Yeah.
And so by that time, I could actually use what I learned at the junior college to write things and write arrangements.
Yeah.
And
you have probably had such a developed ear. You know, I mean, I think people that play by ear and just do all this music and somehow not receive the training that goes with that. Nobody sat you down and gave you organ lessons or piano lessons or violin lessons or, so there was that whole musical piece, but the ear is so developed and people will come, you know, to audition for choirs and things and they apologize, right? Oh, I can't, but what you find is their ear is so incredible that when you begin to couple it with some training like you had in junior college and it just flourishes.
Yeah.
It just goes crazy because most people don't come with that kind of an ear. You know,
right.
They come with the book knowledge instead.
Right. So one of the things I think that was pivotal in this whole development of how I got to OCP was while I was at the seminary, there was a priest in the San Bernardino Diocese. His name was Father Ernesto Badilla. He was a Filipino, but he was coming to the Diocese of San Diego to give a formation on liturgy and music. Sister Joanna Gorski, who was the director of the Office of Worship in San Diego at the time, asked me if I would accompany Father Ernesto playing the guitar for these little workshops and take him down to the Imperial Valley, because one was in San Diego, one was in the Imperial Valley, which is part of the San Diego Diocese, and I did. And we had a wonderful, wonderful experience. I knew the repertoire from that little, before the 40 Cantos, there was a little book called Cánticos de Gracia y Alabanza, and that's what we use. And so he, on the way, drive back from Imperial Valley, he says, I'm Filipino, I can speak Spanish, but the people need one of their own to believe in and to be taught by. You should do it. And I said, well, yeah, right. So, but he had also talked to Sister Joanne Nagorski. He said, we're going to use you. Father Ernesto says you're ready to go out and do workshops. And so while I was still in the seminary, she had me do these workshops for the Diocese of San Diego.
What a wonderful model.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Here's a priest wannabe that's going to go out there and say music is important and liturgy is important. Just the right thing that they were looking for, no doubt.
Yeah, and all along I was writing things. We were singing some of the things that I was writing in the seminary, and I wouldn't say they were all good or anything like that, but we were using them. That we were experimenting in some sense.
Well, even Bach had to find his voice.
Yeah.
You know, every composer has to find their voice. You know, and develop their skills at the same time. Mm-hmm. It just happens. Well, let's hear another piece, shall we?
Yes.
This is another one of your early compositions.
Yes. So I'm going to say it. Actually, I wrote that it was an idea while I was at the seminary, maybe after I left the seminary. And this is a song that came out of the experience of working in the fields in Imperial Valley. You had to get up very, very early. Obviously, the farm work, seeing the sunrise in the east and just beautiful, beautiful colors while you're in the field waiting for it to get light so you can start working. And it's called Amanecer, which means at the break of day or the break of day. And it was a song of praise. It's a hymn of praise based on that experience of praising God for the beauty, for a new gift, a new day of life. And, it has a kind of a chant-like, a very pentatonic chant-like, and at the same time, it's kind of has a Native American feel to it. Recently did the DNA test. I find out I'm 59% Native American.
Okay.
So, anyways, this is
all right.
Song I
want to
set.
We'll be right back. We have so much more to talk about. All of your time at OCP, all of the music for Spanish parishes, and what's coming next. So please stay tuned. Don't go away. Enjoy this amazing piece.
Canto al Creador de un nuevo día, nueva luz me llena de alegría, todo lo que soy, todo mi ser.
You're listening to Music from the Tower on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. You've just been hearing yet another piece from Pedro Rubalcava. This is the Magnificat. And if you come to Christ Cathedral, you hear this piece often. It's one of our favorites. Pedro, we love this Magnificat. Thank you for this gift. The whole church loves this Magnificat. We're all singing it all the time. But it's a piece that has bilingual verses, which makes it great for parishes like ours where we're multicultural. The refrain is in Latin again. And so it's something that we can sing even with our Vietnamese community. Everybody can sing it. It's a tremendous gift. Here's what it says if you read Pedro's bio on the OCP website, the Oregon Catholic Press website. Pedro is dedicated to searching for and creating prayerful experiences for the divine through music, liturgy, arts, and beyond. Wow. And that's your own statement, right?
Yeah.
Did you add that to your bio?
I did.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. It's a big job. You've given yourself a huge task. So you came out of the seminary. That's where we left you. And all of a sudden, you're out doing workshops even before you came out of the seminary. So when did OCP find you?
Well, I was working after I left the seminary in different parishes in San Diego.
As a musician?
As a liturgist musician. I had gone through and finished my bachelor's degree. I started in theology as opposed to, you know, philosophy, which at the time I had equal number of units. Yeah. But then I started a master's, which I never finished because somewhere around the way I got married and I had kids and kind of put on hold. But I was working at different parishes in youth ministry, in evangelization ministry, in RCIA, and religious education, yeah. And music and liturgy.
And always music too?
Yeah.
Did you always have choirs and leading music in parishes?
Yeah. And then I was writing music for these different parishes that I went to.
And was that out of need? You just
mostly, yeah. Again, like Magnificat comes from that same parish, you know, creating. He wanted Latin, and so on. How do we engage people? And we did sing some of the Gregorian chant as well. I mean, we used all kinds of different music that
always finding. I mean, well, Bach had to do that too. You know, he needed a cantata for Sunday, so we wrote it.
Exactly.
He couldn't run to the music store, and I get the feeling that I observe our Rick Soto here, who's a genius in his own right. Of finding the right piece for our Spanish community when there's just not that many resources now, thanks to you and OCP and our other Catholic publishers as well, but especially OCP, right. I would say, that little void is being filled, and it was filled under your leadership there.
Well, thanks be to God, I have the opportunity to do that. I mean, I one of the things that happened first off, I don't know if you remember North American Liturgy Resources.
Yes, that was so. NALR was a big part of our, and that came from the southern states here.
So Ray Bruno invited me to record an album, is how he called it. And so my first collection, Amanecer, which got nominated for a Grammy, but it wasn't in a religious category at all. It was in a Best Mexican American Performance category, which is kind of unique.
Okay. But Grammy nominated.
Yeah.
Here.
And so we went from there, and OCP ended up buying NALR, and that's kind of the OCP connection. Consequently, as a result,
So by being part of that, you were brought into, as many others were.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Jonkas.
Exactly.
Those
the Jesuits,
belonged to NALR way before it belonged to OCP.
And I did some work also with WLP at the time. But
and you still have things published.
I do. Right. Yeah. Yes. And then John Lim, who was a publisher at the time, invited me to come to OCP after I had done another collection, Deo Gracias, that has Deo Gracias and the Magnificat on there. But he invited me to come up, and I thought it was for music, so I brought my little folder of music, and he had me meet with all kinds of different folks. At the end of the day, he says, well, the reason we brought you here is because I want to offer you a job. And he said, we want you to lead our Hispanic efforts, our efforts into Hispanics. So we've got these wonderful things, but we feel we can grow, and we feel you're the person to lead us. You know, you're very respected out there in the communities, as someone who can teach, someone who knows liturgy well, someone who, has the hearts of the people in mind as a pastoral minister. And so in the end, I ended up saying yes, and that's how I got to OCP.
Aren't we lucky?
Yeah. And so
all of us have been the beneficiaries of that decision.
Yeah, and I'm more just grateful, I mean, for the opportunity. And I can honestly say that's been the best job that I have ever had in my life. You know, all these things prepared me for that. And
it's funny when you look back thinking, wow, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have been ready for this.
Right.
It's nice to move forward to the 15 years as the Spanish editor of that series.
Yeah, I wasn't actually editing. I was the director of Hispanic Ministry. We had editors. I mean, you don't want me as an editor. So.
But you had to actually choose the direction for
that division. Exactly. Yeah. And so one of the things that we did, I mean, I worked a lot. By then, we had two editions of Floricanto out. And so while I was there, we ended up working on Floricanto 3. And one of the things we did, because of my being out in the field and talking to folks, and I heard a lot from different cultural communities, different communities from immigrant communities from different countries in Latin America. Primarily, the Catholics in the U.S. are Mexican or Mexican descent. And so there was we had Floricanto 2 had a lot of Cuban music in there because Father Juan Sosa from Florida was part of the editorial board. But there was a lot of South Americans that they felt we need some of our music in there. And, you know, folks from the Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic, we need some of our music in there and other places. And so I ended up going to visit these places to look for music and meet people. And it was a wonderful experience of actually meeting some of the people that had been around since the, you know, I was trying to remember what his name is. I don't remember. It's a Benedictine monk in Puerto Rico. And he was just a wealth of knowledge, even just to listen to him speak about his experience of creating music.
And before we went on the air, we talked a little bit about the difficulty of saying, well, we need Spanish music. You don't, it, just because it's in Spanish doesn't mean it comes from the right area. When I was in the East Coast, most of the music was Puerto Rican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that I'm in Southern California, most of the music is Mexican. And while both in Spanish doesn't necessarily mean, I suppose if we were in Florida, there would be more of a Cuban, you know, so it has to do with the heritage and the sound. The music doesn't all sound the same just
right.
Because it's in Spanish.
Yeah.
And so how do you determine what goes in a collection?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to look at certainly is what is core to a particular area or region, you know, and we look at the music and talk to a lot of different people and say, how does it, it's easier now because, you know, there's the internet, you know, but.
Well, and I think that is true, right. You know, I mean, things have sort of blended over. You know, there was a time even in organ music and classical music when things were very separate. There was French music and Italian.
Yes.
You know, and it was very, and now it is sort of blended. And how do you find that this music is right for the liturgy, or do you find this perfect piece and you think, yeah, but that really shouldn't be sung at the liturgy?
Right. So one of the things that publishing philosophy, OCP, is that not everything that we put in the hymnals or the missals is just for the Eucharist. The parish, it's for the life of the parish. And so there's going to be songs there that you might use for evening prayer, or you might use for sacramental, even though these are liturgies, there are moments like, for instance, prayers after the meetings that you have at the parish, songs, prayers that you can use at home. So there's all kinds
songs
of different songs. So I like to think of it in terms of psalms, hymns, and inspired songs, you know, that they're all these things. And I think hopefully somewhere along the line, we're doing the work of ensuring that people are trained enough to know the difference.
Right. Yes, yeah. Because if you have a book of songs, some are appropriate for Mass, some are not. Who's going to make that determination?
Yeah.
You know, if you're at Christ Cathedral, Dr. Rick Soto can do the job. You know, if you're with Anna Betancourt at the L.A. Cathedral, she can do the job. If you're at Little St. Nowhere's down the river, they may not know.
Yeah.
Wow, that song really isn't right for Mass, but it's just perfect for religious ed class.
Right. And exactly, for religious education. So part of our Liturgia Canción is a publication that we have available both in print and digital. And we give song suggestions from all these resources.
And hopefully, were you the one giving those suggestions?
At one time I was.
Yeah.
Now I'm not. But
now your people are.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, my people. No, they do a great job. But so it's a matter of being, having a right understanding of what the particular moments, the different rites call us to do, what kinds of musics, you know, and understanding the general instructions of the Roman Missal, understanding Musicam Sacram, understanding any number of different documents and teachings.
Spanish Missal as well.
Right, right.
Did that change things? Is that more of a look toward singing the antiphons? I know, at least in the Anglo world, you know, we're working hard to try to sing the entrance antiphon, the communion antiphon, but yet in some of these collections, I don't see a lot of those.
Yeah, I think those are coming. One of the things I like to say, and I don't say this as a demeaning statement by any means, but it just means that we need to do more work. I think that the Spanish-speaking church in the U.S., for the most part, is probably about 10 to 15 years behind what the English-speaking church is in terms of formation. Most of the places that have a Spanish Mass are dealing with an immigrant community for the most part. And a lot of the immigrant community come from countries that probably don't have good formation in liturgy. The people that immigrate, they do so maybe by necessity. There's not too many professional people. There are, but the vast majority is not.
Well, it's just different.
Service industry.
It's the same in our Vietnamese community.
Yeah.
It's the same in our Samoan community. You know, that many of our ethnic groups don't come to us. They're wonderfully educated, wonderful people, but they're coming to us for other reasons, you know, and they come with a whole different bag of issues. And I'm always marvel at people like Rick Soto and even our Father Juan Navarro, who was here beforehand, how he would get up before Mass and say, the reason we're learning this piece today, and he himself, this wonderful priest, would teach him the Sanctus, would right. teach him some, because we're part of the universal church. We must know this song, you know, and for some it was, they never heard it before ever, because they didn't come from a parish that might have done that. In some wonderful spot in Mexico, they came through a whole different means.
Right.
And to connect them, it just made a huge difference. You knew they were going to sing because they're singers.
Right.
You know, they're going to sing whatever you give them. But telling them why you're doing this, or to see Rick write a communion antiphon and say, that procession to the Eucharist, what we talk about in our mouths is the word of the gospel of that day. You know, this is what the church gives us. We must sing it. You know, I love that image that he gets up and explains to our folks why, and they love it.
Right.
You know, it's amazing.
Well, one of the interesting things, and I think this is beautiful, because you mentioned the gospel and the scriptures, the antiphons, whether it's the entrance or the communion antiphon, they're all from scripture, and the vast majority from Psalms. And so to be able to sing psalms, to be able, and we do have antiphons that come directly from the Roman Missal, and they're just kind of sporadically out there, and they would be included in the hymnal, some of these songs, and it'll say right there from the antiphon, ta-da-ta-da, you know. And so it's just a matter, it's not already ordered, but I think that's something that is a project down the road that we're working on too.
I think all publishers are looking at that and yeah. trying to make it a little bit more, and because, at least for us in the English world, at the change, we grabbed onto any hymn we could find, Methodist, Presbyterian, Episcopal, because they sang. So if we use yeah. this song, our people will sing. Well, we found out that wasn't the case necessarily, but it was a way to just get them singing. We were singing it to Kumbaya. We were singing it to anything we could sing just to get them singing. But what we realized was at 30 years later, my gosh, the church already told us what to say.
Yeah.
And we threw it away, you know, for something else. So we're all struggling, you know, even 50 years later now, 60 years later, we're all still looking for, you know, what should we be singing? And that's what I want to talk about in our last segment, is how does a company or a director of a division choose what the American church should be singing? But let's hear one of your masses that we sing the roof off here. Dr. Soto has taught all of us this, even those of us who are organists struggling desperately to play your amazing mass setting. For us, this is called the Mariachi Mass here at Christ Cathedral, but you tell us the real title.
Yes, it's the name of the mass is the Misa del Sagrado Corazón, Mass of the Sacred Heart. It really doesn't have much to do with the Sacred Heart per se, although the image on the album cover is a Sacred Heart in glass that my wife did. And so that was the inspiration to call it
very nice.
Misa del Sagrado Corazón.
I didn't know that chapter.
Yeah. This is the Gloria. And mariachi is really, it comes from, I think, a classical folk tradition it's a wonderful developed music that we have. And I would say that in terms of music of that genre, I would say that a lot of these musicians, some of the best mariachis in the world, are here in L.A. I mean, and we use them, and the arranger from the mariachi de Naticano, Los Camperos, and they do concerts with the symphonies throughout the world, and they're classically trained, a lot of them, but they're in this folk genre. And so there's intricacies in some of these arrangements, and there's formulas and forms, and there's a unique sound of the son and huapango.
It's a very unique sound.
Yeah.
Yes, it's wonderful.
And so it's not easy. And so
no, it's not. Let me just point that out. It's very difficult.
So the Gloria. That's the Gloria.
Here we go. And we will be back with so much more from today's guest, Pedro Rubalcava. Hold on. Don't go away.
Dios en el cielo y en la tierra, paz a los hombres que ama el Señor. Por tu inmensa gloria te alabamos, te bendecimos, te adoramos, te glorificamos, te damos gracias, Señor Dios, Rey Celestial, Dios Padre.
El pecado del mundo,
ten piedad de nosotros.
Tú que quitas el pecado del mundo,
atiende nuestra súplica.
Tú que estás sentado a la derecha del Padre,
ten piedad de nosotros. Jesucristo, con el Espíritu Santo, en la gloria de Dios Padre.
Welcome back to our very last segment. Our time has gone so fast. We have in the studio today Pedro Rubalcava. And Pedro is a composer, a liturgical musician, the head of a whole division for years and years and years, now the head of all the music department and the outreach at OCP. Tell us what that means.
Well, the music development is actually, we take the songs from the composers, the submissions, and we develop the music working with the composers, and we actually look to see.
And you're doing all languages now, not
yes,
just
yes,
Spanish.
Yes. And we not all internally, we have experts that consult with us,
Do you have a little board that decides what you publish and what you don't?
Yes, yes.
And are you the head of that board?
Technically, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, it's nice to be collaborative, though.
Yes.
So if I'm a composer, I send it to you, and what do you do with it? How do you decide what gets published and what?
Well, there's a screening process, and then we have a sing-through. We sing through things. We talk about the piece. So we look at the music. Is it musically sound? Is it beautiful? We're looking for beautiful music. We look at the text. Is it theologically correct? Is there any issues with the text?
And who makes that scrutiny?
We have a couple theological minds in there and liturgical minds in there that are trained. Yeah. And we do. And we have a board of three theologians that we run it through.
Oh, that's
great. Yeah. Before it goes into any of the major publications.
Does it ever hit your bishop? He's such a famous liturgist and musician.
No, but he's aware of our process. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, you're really a division of the diocese. You're not a free-floating publishing company like the
others.
Well,
not really, but we're our own little entity, although the archbishop is the president of the board.
Okay. So it's different than the other two publishers. Certainly the GIA company is not attached to the diocese in any way.
No.
They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And the same with World Library. But OCP has always had that.
Yeah. And the Archbishop is an important part in what we do. Obviously, it's got his name on there, so we better do a good job of that.
Well, and he's an outspoken person in music and has his definite tastes and likes and dislikes. Just put out a huge document.
He did, yeah.
That caused a little bit of consternation. But if you can overlook a few little minor points, it's pretty sound.
Yeah, and he says it's not a juridical document. It's a teaching document.
Yeah.
And so he wants good liturgies. He wants good music. And who doesn't?
Right. Well, we all do.
Yeah.
That's what we're all striving
Absolutely.
For. And you've given your whole life for it, as have I and so many colleagues of ours. You know, we've mentioned a few, Rick Soto here at Grace Cathedral, Anna Betancourt, you know, Dolores Martinez. There's so many in the Spanish world who have been the leaders. And you've led the way With that company. So let's get back to your
yes.
job. I've sent you my piece, and now what?
And so we review it. What's the function? You know, the text, obviously, is it theological correctness, and the melody. Is it going to serve a particular ritual moment? How does it do it? Does it do it well? And so in the midst of that review, we make suggestions and we decide it's worthy of going back to the composer, or it's good as it is, whatever it is, you know. And either we reject it or we say, let's work with this composer to develop it more and give some suggestions, you know, for improvement of the text.
And do composers say, oh, well, I could fix that? And
for the
most part, they're happy to.
I think so, yeah. And some will come back and make a case for something else, and we decide, that's, you know, they have a good point, you know. So let's look at this.
Are sometimes pieces rejected because they're too many in your catalog? I mean, it is a business.
Exactly.
And you can't have 75 Ubi Caritases.
Right.
You know?
And that's part of it, too.
Yeah.
And we say, okay, is it better than what we have? And not some of these pieces are great, you know, but do we need another? And you're right, it is a business case. And so I would say that there is lots of good music that sound and that we don't accept because we have too many of that.
Too many of that.
And it's...
And I know at the change of our English Roman Missal, everybody was writing a mass part.
Correct.
You know, at 500 mass settings, even as in my little cathedral series with Morningstar, I received at least 36 mass settings. Well, my publisher certainly didn't want to publish 36 mass settings. And nobody needed those. Nobody even, you know, the first thought was, thank God we never have to sing Mass of Creation again. And now everybody's singing Mass of Creation. You know, it's funny how it finally weeds itself out. Now we're 3 or 4 years after the change of our English language. The Mass setting itself is an important thing. It's something that ties us together. How's that work at OCP? What are you looking for in a new Mass setting?
Well, probably in the same way, we have lots of them. And so one of the things I think we look at is probably for, aside from the 3 points that I already touched on, is uniqueness. You know, is it something different that is going to lead us deeper into the mysteries that we celebrate? So aesthetics is a big part of it, I think.
Are you looking for bilingual things now that the church
we
is
do.
Getting more?
We do. We are. And again, you know, there's several out there that are doing really well in terms of usefulness, and different communities use different ones. And one of the things I think is to look at, will it work well in the English community, and will it work well in the Spanish community? And can you bring those two together, and does it function as a piece together? And it doesn't necessarily have to be sounding, you know, Latino sounding or this sounding or whatever. I think it's, how does it work together? And too often I think people think that it's got to sound Hispanic or it's got to sound this or that. But, you know, there's some that work really well just accompanied by organ and choir, choral arrangements. And I think that's a wonderful thing, especially when you get these large diocesan celebrations or cathedrals that have a way to use this music or
resources.
Yeah.
But some of it is, how well does it dress up for me?
Absolutely.
At least, you know, I mean, it sounds great with Marcos playing the guitar and a cantor and maybe the choir behind. But how does it dress up? You know, is there brass parts?
Right, exactly.
You know, like when our people sing our mariachi mass of yours. really, when we hit Easter Sunday and now we've got 3 trumpets and we've got violins and we've got, you know, wow, does it take off? You know, but it sounds just as good with the organ and the piano, you know, and maybe a little bit of percussion, you know, on a normal Sunday in ordinary time.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's a good point. You know, does it dress up? So some of them are maybe more simple settings, and some of them actually do have other instruments that arrangements for these masses, choral arrangements, and so.
Well, sometimes pieces come into being because they're commissioned. We're just in the midst of commissioning all sorts of music for the dedication of Christ Cathedral. So they come with a boatload of stuff.
Correct.
And sometimes you hear them and you think, wow, this is an amazing piece. And you strip all that away and you find, maybe not, you know. It's just the melody by itself, something that's just amazing that our people are going to just sing and grab onto? Or is it only snazzy? at with all the brass and all the percussion and all the choral parts and the descants and all that stuff. And then you take all that away, and at 8 o'clock Mass, when I'm playing the organ with one hand and drinking a cup of coffee with the other, it doesn't sound so good.
Exactly. You
know, or it just isn't as interesting.
But I think that's a key, you know. So when I talk about beauty of the is the musical beauty of a piece, it has to, the melody has to sit alone by itself.
Right.
And it has to be memorable. And I, one of the things I always say, and I don't know if this is necessarily the case, but can you sing it just a cappella?
Yeah.
And is it
just
attractive?
By itself.
Yeah.
If you just sang, if the organ was broken, if the guitar didn't have any strings, would it still sing with the people?
Right.
And can it bear the repetition, the natural flow of the repetition of our liturgy? It's one thing to do it one Sunday. It's another thing to do it at five Masses a weekend on 52 Sundays.
Yeah, because we're not creating popular music, you know, what's going to be a hit on the radio. We're creating music that's going to have a long life, beauty that just endures. That's what we're after.
Yes, I think that's what every publisher, that's what every parish musician is after.
Yeah.
What's the best thing I can put in the mouths of my people? Well, my friend, this has been such a great discussion. I just hope that you will be back here in the tower to continue this discussion. Maybe next time we'll pry our Dr. Soto into the...
Okay,
I'd love,
love
to hear you two going at it and talking about all of these topics, where this church is going in the next years. And it's just been a fascinating time together. I thank you so much for
coming. Thank you, John. Thanks for the invitation.
And thank you for this great music you've shared with us, with the whole church, and with us here today in the tower. We have one more song, so don't go away. Tell us about our last piece.
Well, our last piece is a song that I wrote actually for the a retreat setting. So it's the text from the post-resurrection experience from Luke, the two disciples that have the encounter with Jesus. And so it's actually a song that is very simple, kind of like a canon. And so it's got one melody in English and one melody in Spanish that kind of just float together.
And they come together.
And they come together and it forms a communion.
And tell us the name.
It's called Ardía Nuestro Corazón, Our Hearts Burn Within Us.
Well, our you can certainly tell that there's an incredible passion burning within this wonderful man. Pedro, thank you so much for being with us. And as always, at the end of each episode of Music from the Tower, I encourage you to go out and hear some great music in live performance. And perhaps that music might be the composition of Pedro Rubalcaba. So thank you very much for being with us. And until our next episode, have a wonderful week, and we will see you soon.
Thank you.